Hey,
Sure.
Zach. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year as well. How's your holiday?
Wonderful. Took time off. Actually had a break. It was terrific. Did you get a break?
Yeah, I take the last 2 years, 2 weeks of the year off.
Awesome. Totally off. You were like off the grid kind of thing in a good way.
Well, every year, it was that my company would shut down for the last 2 weeks of the year on the professional services side, given that most of our customers and clients would slow down, and then it's just like flights and billing hours would get difficult. So that was like kind of great because I got in this pattern and behavior that I've also taken off during that time period, and I've just carried it forward the rest of my life, or so far in my life as
Awesome.
that going on. That said, I took off personally. This instance, and the first week, with Christmas and such, it was kind of nice, but always hectic because of family and stuff, which is a good nice. Then the second week, my wife and I had like this little retreat to some spa, and it was supposed to be like no detox, no electronics, or a detox from electronics and all this stuff. And I went there, and the very first day, within a couple of hours, I had gotten very sick.
Oh no.
And yeah, and I was like way, way sicker than I've been in years. Like, don't touch me sick. Like, and I
Oh
feel like I'm gonna
gosh.
die. And
Not COVID.
it wasn't COVID. So I thought maybe it was like Omicron or something because it was onset super fast. I had very similar symptoms. And for the 3 days that I was at this spa, it was just miserable. And then after that, it took me another 5 days to recover where I didn't like leave my couch. I missed New Year's.
Oh
And
man,
yeah, it
that's
was
not
just
fun at
miserable. I think
all.
COVID would have been a blessing. Sounded like COVID would have been an improvement.
Well, it's actually sounds like COVID to me. I mean, you said you tested though, it was
Yeah,
negative.
no, I had multiple tests, once right away, and then once mid, and then once towards the end, because I was like, there's no way
Jeez.
this is not COVID.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of them were negative.
So
So,
sorry to hear that. Terrible.
yeah.
Well, I had all the symptoms of COVID. It lasted 7, 8 days. No taste. I've never experienced that before. It felt worse than I've ever felt, and also tested negative. But I did one of those rapid response tests, which they say is low probability of success. So when I talked to
Oh,
one of my friends who was an ER doc, he's like, "You've got COVID. Don't worry about the test. You have it." I'm like, "Okay."
yeah. That's kind of what I was thinking too, is like, I don't, whatever I have, I don't want anybody else to get it, so I'll just stay home.
Smart. Very,
So
very smart.
I got a lot of TV in.
Yeah, good, good. Well, that's good for you. You needed a break from it all.
So I did get a chance to think a lot about what I wanted to do in my career. I thought a lot about what's good for me, what's good for the company, what's good for, a lot of different perspectives. And then I had conversations prior to the break as well, where I did
I
kind
want
of
to
lay
hear
them
how
out,
those went.
and I just kind of said, look, it's not really even about me or building some sort of individual separate segment or empire. It's about adding value and what's going on. It's like we're at a stalemate here where I don't think this is helping anybody. And a lot of people agreed. There wasn't much of a conversation to put out there as a prelude to it. And it's not just because it was obvious, it was also because of additional factors like, the great resignation that's going on, and people are analyzing things from multiple perspectives, and how organization is functioning. And so there's a lot of different lenses on things. So I had conversations with my previous leader, I had conversations with my new leader, I had conversations with my new leader's leader, and then I had conversation with the chief. And I just actually had a conversation with the chief today after having a conversation with several vice presidents. All of the vice presidents, they were just like, hey, yeah, this makes a lot of sense. You're obviously in an untenable position, but also what you're saying makes a lot of sense. We don't know how to fix it or where to go with what you want to do, because it's across so many things. But it does make sense that you present this. Anyways, I had that conversation today then with the chiefs, and he's like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense to me. This is why I brought you across. don't worry about talking to any more of these vice presidents. Just for now on, you know, talk to me only. And then whatever you want for a proposal, just send it to me. And everybody eventually rolls up to me and we'll just reorg the whole thing, however it needs to work.
Wow. Couldn't ask for a better outcome, huh?
Yeah. If it makes me happy, I guess. You know, which I...
No, it's not about whether it makes you happy. It's whether it's right. And then you can decide if you want to stay through it.
Whether you're
in that role or somebody else is in that role.
It's the right, like, I couldn't ask for a better outcome for the organization to set them on track, to get them going for their vision. And then if I'm the right person for it, then, you know, that's better. A different conversation.
Yeah.
So I feel a lot better about it, like kind of monkeys off my back. And I got a good aim and a good focus now on what I need to do up until I kind of leave for Africa at the end of the month. And then, you know, I can create a proposal and...
Now, this proposal, I mean, I get what you're saying. Like, it creates for you also a new sort of undertaking that's fairly significant.
Well, it's like what we talked about. It's new challenges, new problems, but it's the right problems.
Yeah, well, and also, I mean, again, I don't know if you want to continue working together even in this capacity or another one, but the very challenges you're describing are the very challenges that's what I do all day, every day. So, you know, I'm happy to help where you want it and need it. And if you feel you got it, then you got it. But everything you described, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's all the stuff that I deal with all the time. So I think you're in a great spot. You're in a great spot. And you've got a lot of great intuition about how to do this stuff also. So in addition to external support, you also have your own internal chops that are beyond just technical expertise. You're developing the human and system and organizational understanding that has a body of knowledge, not unlike an engineering problem. You know, there is a big body of knowledge around this that I can keep guiding you on and introducing you to if that's useful.
Yeah, you and I can talk about that. I'm interested in hearing options, you know.
Just know what they are. Robin, welcome. Happy New Year.
Hey, Robin.
You're on mute. Still can't hear you. It's personal. No. Still nada. A lot of pantomiming. You'll call us back. Okay, bye. I read lips. okay, so what's the next step? So you had the conversation and now it's basically you got to build the proposal. Is that kind of it?
Yeah. I mean, then that was, I guess I had the conversation like an hour ago, you know, so.
Man, I think that's amazing. Congratulations. I think it speaks to as we talked, the capital that you have in credibility that you can spend. And not only did you spend the capital in this instance, it actually didn't cost you anything.
You know, I was going to say that because you and I talked about I have a lot of capital to spend. And I was thinking about that while making a cup of ramen noodles today. And I was thinking about how much of a tight ass I am on that kind of thing. Like I don't spend anything. Like I'm making a cup of ramen noodles, literally, you know?
And honestly, part of what you spent is actually ended up being an investment, not an expense.
Right.
Because somewhere
this evolves, there's going to be some spending, right? There will be some spending as this evolves because I'm going to make a lot of mistakes. But even in my conversation with this guy, he told me, he's like, I don't even care if you build the wrong thing for the next year. Like, he's like, you got whatever leeway you want.
This is amazing, man. You got a blank check and you absolutely. So my interest for you is you've clearly spent a lot of years developing a lot of capital. And as you know, many of the skills you learn at lower levels aren't the same skills you needed at higher levels. Right. And I think you're learning that. I think you know a lot of that. You're probably now entering a level that another new octave of skills are going to be required for you that are going to be related to fractal understanding, chaos theory, all that kind of stuff that is next level thinking that most people don't understand how to do in organizations, but I think you will. And I think that's exciting and it's also going to be fun for you to learn. And by the way, I would say frames for you going forward, especially when you have the kind of backing you just got, what you just said was quite a lot of backing, is start thinking in terms of local experiments rather than making mistakes. So that frame and that language is going to help you to say, hey, over here, I'm going to try a local experiment. We're going to, in this little area, we're going to do this thing. It's called an experiment. And we use experiments to gather data and feedback about a hypothesis, which is fundamentally different than we're all going this way and, oh, that was a mistake. And so that becomes an important pre-frame for you going in, because each local experiment then is treated and read. The results are read as merely a feedback and data from an experiment. And if the feedback and the data means we all need to go left instead of right, even though we all thought it was right, that's not a mistake. And I think that's critical for you to frame that way so that you continue to just build your capital account, which I think you will.
So that's interesting, because what I'm doing, first of all, I want to circle back, because one of the things you said after fractal understanding, you said some other word in there that I...
Chaos theory.
Okay. I just want to go research that a little bit.
And systems theory. So
yeah, I know systems theory, Will.
Yeah.
Chaos theory, I'll go touch back on. Maybe I've picked it up along the way and just discarded it or something, but I want to... but it, really with what I'm doing is... we can't find any other business models to match what we've done.
Yeah.
I watched a lot of Salesforce, Atlassian, other companies that have gone through similar evolutions and taking like on-prem models to the cloud or whatever, but they also don't have critical core transaction systems that are running, you know, like in our case, we run 75% of the world's global insurance through our systems for property casualty insurance. So Salesforce is a CRM. So yeah, they have a lot of cloud customers, but they don't have the criticality that we have on our systems as we do a lot of what we do. Like they can actually go offline or do something, because it's like, yeah, your Salesforce goes offline. But like for us to go offline, it's a way different conversation for a policy billing or claim system to go offline. Relatively. So these are core transaction systems. It's the heart and bread and butter of like an AIG or a MetLife or any big carrier that you could possibly think of. It basically runs on my company. And so the things that I'm building right now to do for them, no one's really done. No, there's no examples out there. And that's why I'm looking at building out a new team to do some of that. It can't be so much, it does need to be some local experimenting, but I'm looking at ways to build value faster for our customers and bring it to market to solve some of these problems. Why I've been kind of frustrated and focusing on building out my own value stream and owning that old value stream is because we get stalled up across all the individual decision makers across the way. I'm trying to take like a little bit of each of them and bring it in. Right.
To what extent is what you're doing? Are you familiar with the Saturn case study?
No.
You know, like the car company Saturn, right?
Okay.
Do you know how that came about?
No. I do a lot of research, obviously, on case studies, but no, I don't.
Yeah, know. Yeah. There's like a Harvard Business Review case study, and I'm not sure how applicable it is, honestly. Because this was, you know, in the 90s, and it's a different story, but there may be some similarities in terms of how organizational change management works. So in short, the way Saturn came about was there was this awareness that GM's entire approach to making cars was broken, and the many attempts to try to repair that simply weren't working. And so a guy proposed a new approach to doing it, and they called it Saturn, and they built a kind of a... It was bigger than a Skunk Works. It wasn't like Skunk Works. It was like a full organizational design that needed to be built and created. And it was wildly successful until somebody else tried to take it over and turn it into GM all over again. And then it failed. But if you remember Saturn in the early days, it was the Tesla of the time. And, Tesla effectively did the same thing. They're like, we're just not going to do anything Detroit did. We're going to reinvent the entire approach to this thing and create something brand new. Saturn was successful because it had leadership that trusted the leaders who are building the Saturn model. And so, you know, it strikes me that there may need to be some way in which you think in those terms. There may be some metaphors and reference points from the Saturn story that I would say is worth talking about. And by the way, that's why the word local experiment is important. It doesn't literally mean you need to do little tiny experiments. It just means you're using frames that, and this is what will happen, as you know, the higher you get into a system, the more your language frames become incredibly powerful. And here's why. Your whisper is a shout now. Your whisper is a shout by virtue of the span of control you're being given. Every word you say will be amplified. That's why the words matter far more at higher levels than at lower levels. And your whisper is also a shout now by virtue of the chief saying, yep, go, you've got all the credibility, blank slate. That means you now got a whisper as a shout from the VPs. They now hear you louder than they would have heard you before. And everybody below you, by virtue of span of control, your megaphone is proportionate to the scale of the organization you manage. And so that's why language training and language patterns becomes incredibly essential for you, and to invent new language patterns if we need to, in order to create that change management in a system.
I agree.
Okay. Let's check. We'll come back to you in a minute. Robin, can we hear you?
I think you can now.
Yay!
I attempted to join from a new iPad that I'd never used Zoom on before. And apparently it was like unable to use microphone, unable to, because my laptop needed to reboot. So
okay.
Now I'm back on my laptop, but I hope you guys had a nice set of holidays there.
Thank you. You as well.
Zach was sick for part of his, but the rest of us had a great time. I see your, is that an office background, like a Zoom background, or is that actually your child's room?
This is my daughter's bedroom. So when I work from home, her closet is huge. It's like big enough to fit two desks. And so all of our desks are actually in the closet so that when you're done, you can close the doors and not see them at the desk. So I'm in her room when I work from home.
Awesome. Cool.
Zach, I'm curious, just real quick, when you were talking about some of like the case studies and some of the how it's not, how you're trying to do something with the core system that's pretty critical. And a lot of, because it's crazy, because a lot of core infrastructure is still like mainframe in a lot of places, especially like really old companies. But
banks are running on mainframes. I understand.
And I don't know if we'll be able to not quite honestly until maybe you invent it. But I kind of like what Shane was saying. I don't know if this is another kind of place to look. But have you heard like Square and Stripe and some of their technology? That's like the closest that I could think of that's doing some core things, but not all of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know Square and Stripe are pretty cool for payment processing. Yeah, they're good technologies. Actually, Stripe will IPO this year, hopefully. I hope to be an investor. But if you can think of something like Microsoft Word is a suite of office programs. So like you have Word processor, PowerPoint. Yeah. What my company does is they build policy, billing, claims, which then integrates with things like Stripe. So that way Stripe can do a payment processing when you purchase your policy or billing, but it does all of your policy management. So it's they're just like different applications.
Yeah.
Gosh. And when I say like that, what I'm doing that's evolutionary or new is, When these core transactional systems that have this kind of criticality on them are now in the cloud and really have zero downtime and all the additional pressures on them. And say like an example, we had that zero critical security issues that came out a couple of weeks ago. We lost like months of engineering to that already, right? But when everybody in the world had to patch their software, we have to be able to provide updates and push updates as if we're Netflix, right? Just like Netflix never goes up or down. You just have Netflix in its version. But now, Robin, I think you work in banking, right? Like, can you imagine if like everybody had the same exact banking software and it was just like one standard Netflix for banking? Sounds cool, but banking is not the same everywhere in the world, right? And like different segments in banking and different lines of business that you might sell or you might customize. So like everybody wants a different property casualty insurances like that. And then it's different for every jurisdiction that business is done. And so it's highly customized and different. So these are like highly configured systems that you update, and you can't just push updates as if it's a black box. Mm. You know what I mean? So it's, we have to be able to prove that we update without breaking high scale transaction systems, doing like hundreds of thousands of quotes with millions, if not billions of dollars going through them per minute. And then prove that. And then when it comes to like security vulnerabilities, you need to be able to do that like overnight globally to 60 something countries or something like that, you know, AWS style, large. So it's like my job is to change the culture to set it up to do that, and then also produce the technology and the components. Stripe is something that's like processing the payments separate, like something that our applications would call to.
It's not a core. Yeah. Okay. I was just thinking about it. Okay. So wait, Shane, I'm trying to just keep track. Is this our last connection?
No. I think I gave you guys some extras in part because we took some days off for the holidays. So I think the end of the month is our last one. And then for those that want, I don't know that I'm offering to continue this time, but I do offer, if you're able, there's the other group that I do in an ongoing way that people can continue. Some people decide to continue on. So you have that option too, but it may not work for timing.
I was just curious.
Yeah. We've got a couple more sessions. So probably through near the end of January, I think is when this cohort ends.
Okay.
So what's going on, if anything, for you, Robin?
It's a lot going on. I guess there's something kind of, it's not something tactical that maybe you could help me think through. That's like smaller scale that you can help me think through. And then wanted to circle back a little bit on some of the, that meditation or exercise work that we did previously, but something tactical that I'm struggling with a bit is the relationship with me and one of my direct reports. We are, and I wanted to socialize this because my boss, the CIO, she asked me yesterday. She was like, I need some advice. I don't know how to deal with Tracy. So we have Tracy reports to me, and I can describe some of what she was challenged with. And it's kind of like a window into what's challenging with Tracy. So Tracy has been with the bank for 26 years, and previous to the role that she has now, she was the vendor manager for our largest vendor. Like, the bank has a core provider, and so she managed that relationship. It's the largest check we cut. You know, it's a pretty substantial vendor, and she reported directly to my boss previously. And then and that's always been the case, but she worked very closely with this, with our vice chair, who is essentially like the the main executive point of contact or point of escalation for this relationship. So she's got some historical.
So I understand that the CIO is below the person you just referenced.
Yes. So it goes vice chair, CIO.
You.
It used to be Tracy, and then and Tracy and I were peers, and now I.
Oh. Yeah.
Now I'm Tracy's boss.
How long ago did you become her boss?
July.
Okay. So that's already difficult. Got it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've been there how long?
I've been at the bank for 2 years now.
So within 2 years after she had been there 20 some years, and you're probably younger than her?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Good context. Thank you.
And Tracy, and unfortunately, how Tracy found out that I was going to be her manager or could become her manager was also not great either. My boss did not handle that communication super well. She kind of sprung it on her in a team setting as opposed to having that conversation when I wasn't even there. I was on maternity leave when all of this happened. But so it was like off to a little bit of a rocky start. And when I came back from maternity leave and heard about what had occurred, I just called her right away. And I was like, oh my gosh, that's freaking awkward. I'm so sorry. Like, how do you really feel? And I just wanted to let her like say whatever she wanted to say. And she was like, well, it was just weird that she brought it up, you know, in that group setting. And as opposed to one-on-one, like it really did make me feel put on the spot. It also made me wonder, like, am I not meeting expectation? Like there was a lot that needed to be discussed one-on-one and I didn't have the opportunity. So yeah, there's some dynamics at play with that, how that unfolded, but also historically, because the vice chair and Tracy have both been in the organization. The vice chair has been in the organization for 30 something years. She's retiring in a year and a half. But that vice chair and Tracy have been working together in that capacity for about 10 years. And they have had a couple CIOs come through. So because of that, Tracy and the vice chair connect pretty often and regularly. And when when the CIO became the CIO, she and Tracy was still reporting to her. She said, you know, Tracy, you need to see me on communication that you're having with the vice chair, because I can't show up to Sharon's office and not know what the heck she's talking about if she happens to bring up something related to this vendor, you know. So just CC me on communication. And she still struggles to do that till this day. So so that's one thing that's frustrating for myself as well as Taryn, is she does not meet expectations when it comes to making sure that everybody that needs to be knowledgeable is knowledgeable. And she gave me like a whole slew of excuses or reasons why that was the case. And I just said, doesn't matter. Just CC. Like, that's it. I'm not asking to run something by me first. Just CC. Like, I just have to know what's been said by whom and when. Same thing with our boss. So she's still struggling with that. But what my boss was irritated about and was looking for coaching on is Tracy oddly seems to fixate on things that aren't really important and chooses to bother people about it. Meaning like she was really worried about, or she kept bothering, she would text people at very high levels in the organization about things on weekends and vacations that do not effing matter. And that hasn't happened for a while, but it started happening. I guess it happened in November once or twice. I didn't know. So I'm just learning about this information, you know, yesterday. And now she did it again. She did it again, I guess, over Christmas break. And Taryn's like, I need to figure out how, like, I feel like I've been very direct with her. I've said, no, don't do that. I'm the CIO. Like, maybe I have some weight. And I was like, wait, but Taryn, the challenge is I'm also just learning about this for the first time. So I need to go and confront her and have a conversation with her about some of this. But what I'm realizing is she has this pattern of continuing to, it sounds militant when I say like the chain of command, but like a disregard for, I think, some of what the organizational hierarchy is. And that's really what it is. Like some of the other tactical stuff that she's doing, I have no idea why, but what she's missing is, I think, she's just doesn't value or doesn't respect the chain of command. I don't know. That's what the scenario is. And so I want to have a conversation with her this afternoon.
Okay. So yeah. let me interject a little bit here. So you're talking about step skipping when somebody goes around in the chain of command. And here's what you need to know. The fault always lies with the people higher up in the hierarchy. Anybody right. higher up in the hierarchy who tolerates step skipping or creates it, it's almost like training a puppy. like the dog isn't to be blamed if it keeps, you know, peeing on the carpet. The owner is blamed for that. So this is how the power flow works. So you will have very limited success in getting the puppy to stop until the owner actually stops the behavior. So all of your efforts, you and the person above you's efforts, need to be focused on the person at the top who actually is breaking that step every time. That's where you have to stop that because you're dealing with legacy relationships. So knowing where to go is really critical and it's got to go up, not down. Now, I'm not saying you can't have a conversation with her. You can. What you're going to get is the same thing over and over again. And the reason is because all the power is above.
Yeah.
And you have two kinds of authority. You have formal authority and informal authority. Anytime you have legacy relationships, the informal authority will always trump the formal authority. And so your job is for you and the CIO to meet with the vice chair and let that vice chair understand that if you are going to be held accountable for the performance of this person, then that means your request of the vice chair is to no longer maintain contact with that person until or unless one or both of you are in the room. And so, or alternatively, you simply invite them to say, if you'd like to maintain the kind of informal contact and relationship that you have, that's a legacy relationship, then we ask that we are not held accountable to the behavior of that staff person. We aren't able to do both. And so what you're doing is you're identifying the limits of structural powers if we are not abiding by the written code. So the step skipping is absolutely material and has significant consequence for the ability to manage behavior of somebody else. So I think the first step is really, you can say all you want to the person below you. It's going to be the same thing over and over. As long as she knows and she's been trained, I have the ear of the vice chair and these two people that are between me are new and are going to be leaving anyway. Eventually, you guys aren't going to be around. I don't have to listen to you because I've got someone I can go to anytime I need to. And I can just say, hey, this is kind of weird. I think we should do this. And then that person's like, yeah, you're right. I think you're right. And then you guys go to the vice chair and you're like, hey, this isn't working. They're like, oh, yeah, sorry, sorry. And they're both saying, sorry, sorry, sorry. So the way you do it is
changing. Yeah.
Yeah, nothing's going to change. And you just need to raise that flag with the CIAO, with the vice chair to say, here's the fork in the road we're at. We're having performance issues. We are unable to manage that performance as long as this legacy relationship is intact the way that it currently is. We fully understand that she is not to be expected to change that because you're the one in power. The only one who can actually change that is you. And the only way we know to change that is for you to set up boundary conditions for that employee. We also understand you have a legacy relationship in which you might prefer to keep that relationship intact, in which case our request is that you change the accountabilities, because accountability has to match authority. And right now, those are out of balance.
Yeah.
As long as you continue to allow her to go around us, I am unable to and am no longer authorized to manage her performance. And just let her know that, whoever that vice chair is, I assume it's a woman. I think you mentioned
her. Yeah.
So just letting her understand this is the dynamic that we're facing, and the step skipping has to stop, or it can continue, but we have to find new ways to hold us accountable for her performance.
Yeah. And I think the approach that I was going to take with her, so the vice chair and I have a conversation set up for next Friday. So I'll address it with her.
With the CIO.
So she won't be there, but.
Because that's step skipping again. You're going to be actually trying to.
Yeah. What I could do, she can't, like logistically, she can't be there. So, I mean, if worst case scenario, she could just have a similar conversation the day before.
That would be ideal. That would be, as long, or even if you just notify her and say, this is what we're doing. I've already discussed it with the CIO. We come with a shared perspective. You can confirm it with her later. As long as the conversation happened in advance and everybody's notified, it's okay.
Yeah. I think I have to take that approach for logistical purposes.
Yeah, that's fine. That's totally doable.
Yeah. I've already told Taryn, because I was telling her, like, my advice is actually like, this is a Sharon problem, not a Tracy problem.
Yes, it's not a Tracy problem. Tracy's doing exactly what any of us would have done in the same situation.
Yeah, I was like, you know, don't get me wrong, like, Tracy, the other thing, the texting people about unimportant stuff, that is actually a Tracy problem. But I did tell Taryn, I was like, did you tell her it was unimportant? Because
even then, that's a Sharon problem, because what, Sharon is the vice chair?
Mm-hmm.
So what Sharon has done has set a precedent. And the precedent is, even though I'm at an executive level, you can reach out to me. You can sidestep, you can do whatever you want, and there's no consequence. That has trained her, Tracy, to believe, oh, then I can just do this because I've been here a long time, so I have the ability to do what I want to do.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you shouldn't correct Tracy. You should. You should alert her that this is step skipping in it, and you shouldn't be doing it. And it is causing problems in the system, and we need you to stop doing it and be very direct about it. And you should confront it directly. I'm not saying you shouldn't be talking to her. I'm saying that you don't have teeth yet until the vice chairman enforces the teeth. But your starting point is, hey, this isn't working. We have this chain of command. It has to be respected in order for functioning to work. We need lots of clarity. Right now, you are creating a lack of clarity. So you can't continue having those conversations with the vice chair without our involvement. We need to be present in every meeting and every conversation going forward.
Yeah.
And then you should also ask the question, I mean, one thing I want to understand is, how do you know that she's been reaching out, texting people on vacation and all that? What, how do you know that information?
Well, Taryn just told me yesterday that was occurring. And I don't know.
Who's Taryn?
She's the CIO. Sorry. The CIO told me yesterday, okay, that she in particular was being texted repeatedly while she was on vacation about unimportant, insignificant things. And she's like, I didn't respond, and I still haven't responded because that is not something I need to worry about. And I said, well, okay, but I was saying, like, have you told her? You know, have you said anything about it? Because if you don't, then she's going to keep doing it.
No, this is great, though. You can absolutely say something about it, because if the CIO says it, she's in reinforcing the step skip.
Right.
You being the, going forward, the ideal scenario is she can't get anybody's ear, and every time she tries, she hears from you instead. That will reinforce for her. I can't get an audience. And every time I try to get an audience, this my boss keeps talking to me. Like, yeah, it's exactly what happens. Going forward, I would love for the CIO and this other woman, the vice chair, I can't remember the names, to stop responding to her entirely and or saying, go talk to Robin. If you have questions or concerns, go through Robin. Robin will be in touch with us. That's the way to ensure you have authority and power. And then Tracy will be trained. It's the only way to train her.
Okay.
If you want your boss to say anything to Tracy, the only thing she should say is, in the future, please go through Robin. That's the only thing she should say.
Okay.
It's not a book for everybody, but have you ever read the 48 Laws of Power?
Mm-mm.
I'm sure Shane has.
I have.
It teaches you a lot about how to deal with people like that.
I mean, literally, it's no different than children or puppies. I mean, I hate to say it. I don't mean to be demeaning, but humans are that way. We have to be sort of trained. And boundaries are not our, when we have a boundary, it is our job to enforce that boundary. Anytime you're dealing with boundaries, it is your responsibility to enforce them, not the other person.
There's a lot of little micro strategies in there too, like creating a system where they have to go through you. I like that you hit on that.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that's why it requires the backing of the people above you. So I would say set up some rules that you're going to request. Say for at least the next 3 months, the only proper response to her is please talk to Robin. Just give them that input. Anytime she contacts you, please respond with please talk to Robin.
Yeah.
And that's your request you make above. And if they're unable to honor that request, then you go back to them and say, it looks like this isn't going to work. So let's find another strategy that you are able to honor. Because we had an agreement. And the agreement was that you would, and this is the thing, you can call people above you to honor the agreements you make. So first try to make an agreement. I'd like to make an agreement with you. And the agreement is, we need to train Tracy to understand the new chain of command. The only way that I know how to do that is for each time she contacts either of you to reply simply, talk to Robin.
Well,
and if you're unable to do that, what's another agreement you can do?
Well, I'm thinking about what you're saying, and it might just be a matter of like tweaking the nuance, but there's actually some of what's occurring or what the communication that needs to occur does actually need to be between the two of them.
That's fine, but then you need to be involved.
But then I have been aware. Like that's the part that where I have like where I'm pretty firm on the boundary is like, I can't not know. I think it's okay because there's certain things that need to be, that need approval very immediately. And I don't want to be a barrier in those instances because that's business continuity. And so if, as long as I'm aware or CC'd or am knowledgeable of something occurring, that is the absolute boundary. That's pretty clear in black and white. But where it gets, where now I'm like kind of questioning that though, because if that's the scenario, oh, that's been kind of the setup and she's already failing at that, but that's been the setup. Now I'm thinking about rethinking this a little bit and saying to myself, if that's the case and she's allowed to contact her directly and I just need to be made aware, I'm actually leaving the door open.
That's exactly
not clear cut enough.
I think you need, for a period of time, that can work in other scenarios. It does work in other scenarios. When you have the right people with goodwill who understand the system and are respecting it, it's fine. You don't have one of those. You have real legacy issues. I mean, those legacy issues trump everything. So my challenge to you is to think a lot harder about how to deal with business continuity and not having bottlenecks while still restricting access. And I don't know the details, so I wouldn't be able to know how to solve it. But I think if you spend a little bit
of time. That's solvable. Yeah, now that you're saying it, I'm like, there's different ways that we could deal with it. I mean, it could be it could be a flow of activity. Like if I don't respond within a certain amount of time, yes,
exactly.
Then it's the CIO.
Yeah, exactly.
Where she's going to Sharon instead of me.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
There's something that I can do to, because I was just thinking about, I'm like, oh, I can't do that because that is still leaving her. Because then she's going to take that as, well, it's important enough.
It's just the same thing that you had before. That's all you're doing.
It's just
the same thing. So there needs to be a new rule and a new thing that she's held accountable to. And it has to be enforced by the highest level.
Yeah.
And that's the hard part, is you won't be able to enforce any of it unless the people above you do.
Yeah. And what's interesting is there's a lot with her that she's been operating in a way for so long that is actually not okay. And it presents a lot more risk to the organization than she thinks she's mitigating risk, but she's actually creating the risk. Cause what I'm learning is, cause this old role was actually something she had to backfill for. She took a new position and now her old role reports to her. And she is really, I learned on Monday, she's not letting go. Like she's not actually transitioned the role fully.
She's doing is old habits. Everything she's doing is an old habit. And all of those old habits are trainable. You can train a person out of it. You can't. But the two levels above you can't, along with the CIO, they both have to do it. But it sounds like the CIO is way more open, and this vice chair, this may be news to her that she has to change how she behaves. That vice chair may not be able to change how she behaves, but you can form an agreement with her.
Mm-hmm.
And if she violates the agreement, you still get to go talk to her about it. You still get to say, hey, this is the agreement. I notice we're not able to do that agreement. Do we need to change the agreement?
Yeah, and I think I can appeal to the fact that the vice chair is retiring. Like, we have a date. We cannot, the organization cannot operate this way when she is gone. It will not work.
Organization can't operate that way while she's here.
While she's here. But, I mean, it actually, all things would stop if that's the continued process. Like, that's just not effective. So I think I can appeal there. And I think we've built enough rapport where I could build an agreement that we could work to for at least a 3-month time frame, and then we can leave the door open that we could reassess if it's not working out. But give it a try.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you.
We can come back to you in a minute. Zach, what else is on your mind these days? I know, Robin, you want to talk about some bigger kind of purpose stuff and some of the meditation stuff, but I'm just going to check in with Zach real quick. Zach, other things on your mind that you want to check in today?
No, I mean, I've had a lot going on, just as I shared already today, that I haven't had much time to reflect on. And I have enough meaning and purpose myself now to figure out and solve. That's not problems that I can't solve, right? So I can figure that out. I was really interested in what Robin was talking about, because I had some very toxic individuals in our organization for a while. I had this one specifically who is a practice director ish, and it was in a parallel practice with some overlapping initiatives but not overlapping ideas, and they were really setting us back. And then when you said, when I saw you kind of had that look on your face, they can't keep doing it this way, this is really bad for the organization, right? And I seen you had that look on your face, that's why I kind of thought that's where you're going to go with this. And that's why I also mentioned that book. I got to a point with this individual on my side where it wasn't just above me, but it was also below me. I had to do the very similar alignment that Shane was talking about. I had to ask, it was uncomfortable for a while, but I had to ask all of my direct reports and all of the people on my team that whenever they were communicating with this individual to also put me on BCC. So I had copies of the conversations. I had to put in rules and guidelines that whenever people were on Zoom meetings, that they recorded the Zoom meetings with them to protect the organization. And as an example, the reason was that the individual was doing just like crazy stuff, and they really thought it was in the best interest for the firm, but it wasn't. As an example, like they were trying to create like a QA practice to sell as sellable services. And then which was against the organizational direction of what we were going to do, but they're also trying to pitch their husband's QA practice as a private service, right? Which was getting us in a lot of hot water. Yeah. And there's like different whispers going around the company around what the intents were, which obviously I control all of these decisions. And there was just like a consistent flow of stuff like that that was happening that was putting us in more and more risk. And she just was telling herself a story that was not good. She just thought like, oh yeah, I can help him out, and I'm trying to help him, and I'll bring in my husband's QA firm. And like, you know, it just wasn't good. And I would tell her very specifically, like, no, we are not creating a QA practice. And then she'd go around and tell other VPs like, no, we'll create a QA practice. And then she would go and try to staff QA, and she started selling QA and doing like really crazy stuff. And so like, yeah, it undermines authority in a while. That book, similar to like Shane's advice, had really helped me come up with strategies using examples to centralize the authority, to put in the checks and balances, to get the proof that I needed. And it goes way back through history, and it uses a lot of things, but you know, it really helps spark some creative thinking on identifying your enemies. And I don't want to label them as such, but sometimes it is a political battle. Figure out where the lines are.
And for you, Robin, there may be this woman may not be playing dumb. I mean, she may be playing dumb, but she's not dumb. You know?
She's not. She's 36 years into this, and she works with the vice chair. She's not playing dumb.
Well, and it gets really, I mean, it gets really effing sticky because her husband is the CISO.
Is so
the what? The chief information security officer.
Oh, you're kidding. So there's nepotism involved. Oh, my gosh.
She
has no respect for authority in this case.
She's above it. She's absolutely above it. And like, I don't want to get mad because that's not productive.
Right.
But, and like, you know, this is how she sleeps at night, whatever. but how it directly impacts like what I'm responsible for is what I need to focus on. And I think this is like a healthy piece, but it is complicated because her husband also, and my CIO was talking to me about the same thing actually happened with him, where he, in a meeting with everybody else, shared a new vulnerability before telling her. She found out in the exact same meeting, and she was like, I think this is like the organization has coached them that this is okay to do it this way.
It has. That is part of what's happened. The organization tolerates it. And so that's why I'm saying the vice chair, the best thing you can do is form an agreement and actually use that word. I'd like to form an agreement with you. And that binds them. And then I would follow it up in writing to say in an email after you've got verbal agreement, follow it up with an email that says, this is my understanding of our agreement. Could you please confirm it?
Yeah.
And if they can confirm it, now you've got it in writing. And it's not because there's some legal cause, but because you can simply go back to them and say, and this is the best way to handle agreements going up. You can say, it looks like we're having a difficult time honoring the agreement we made. Do we need to change the agreement? And that's a really powerful thing to say. Instead of saying, you need to honor the agreement, you actually put them on their heels when you go, do we need to change the agreement? Because now they're like, yeah, I'm not sure I would know how to change the agreement because the agreement we made is really reasonable.
Makes a lot of sense.
And I'm not honoring it. And now they're like, no, we don't need to change the agreement. I just need to do a better job. That's what you want a superior to be able to say. You never want to confront them as if they're failing. you give them the chance to confront themselves in front of you, and you do it from a place of neutrality. So you're absolutely right. The emotions has to come out of it. And so, I mean, this is where the higher you get in organizations, the more your power is connected to language and words. And that's why I would say, if you want a boss to change their behavior, you say, can we form an agreement? That agreement creates power. The word creates power. And when they fail the agreement, the words you use are really important. And you say, it looks like we can't honor the agreement. Should we make a different agreement? That is how you call them into behavior change for themselves. And if you're working with someone who has goodwill, my experience is 9 times out of 10, they make the adjustment themselves without having to change anything. Unless you have bad will, then it's a different story.
Yeah, this can apply to another scenario that had come up in the last couple of weeks with a partner who, it's tough because there's a lot of what he says that's valid, but then there's a lot of what he says that's just an asshole behavior. And we have to form an agreement. We need an effing agreement. But I also think he's a little bit crazy. And so, Zach, I think I do need the team to BCC me on all communication going forward, because he has been acting super malicious.
Can I push on that just a little bit? I'm not saying you can't or shouldn't do that. I just want to make sure we're clear. I'm actually not a huge advocate of BCCing.
I think it becomes regular. That's fine.
Yeah, I think CC is always better whenever you can. I understand if you're dealing with a sociopath, you may have to get a lot more tricky than you are. But until you have evidence that you're dealing with a sociopath, transparency will always work better than hiddenness. And I understand there are certain things you do need to be hidden about. You just don't want a record of anything that was hidden. That becomes really problematic. So if later it gets exposed that you've been BCC'd on everything, it compromises your credibility and other people's credibility in a very big way. So I'm not saying Zach did it wrong. I'm just saying whenever possible, I recommend against BCC.
And I would start there with a CC anyways. And then if they don't feel comfortable because of what's happening, they can forward me the conversation, something like that.
But always what starts to happen when you do CC me on everything, it brings into light everything. And light is the most powerful way to expose the misdeeds. Hiddenness only creates other kind of misdeeds. Now, there are absolutely circumstances in which you have to play a card game and you need to hide certain cards. And that is valid. I'm not saying that there isn't a place for hiding certain things. Right. But
I completely agree with Shane. I didn't mean to say BCC before. We did do some BCC stuff at a higher level for some of the stuff that was getting passed around. But yeah, I completely agree. We also did the recording of all conversations, right? Zooms, right? So we'd always get on a call and be like, hey, do you mind if I record this for, you know, whatever, right? And make up an excuse. But you had to record that person.
Yeah.
I would go on a vacation and she would look for like the days that I would leave, and she would just like exploit it at all of my lower level employees. She'd just go and exploit them like every day that I'd be off. It would be a nightmare.
But she'd be
looking for ways to exploit things.
But even like simple, what I think needs to start occurring in this other situation is even just written follow-up email communication to what was agreed upon and who was going to do what, because this person is making shit up. This person is making shit up. And that's more about agreements, right? And it might not be like in black and white. It is not what's happening right now. Is they might be saying that, but it also needs to be inked in black and white with the word agreement, and then sent back. Like that's the expectation change, I think, that needs to
occur. Robin, I had an instance where this person was quote unquote making shit up, and I called them out on it. I said, look, not only are you making shit up, you joined one of my calls in front of nearly 400 people, and then you threw it off track by raising your hand and asking a question in front of all these people, and then saying that you didn't know about anything that I had said that I've coached you on for like 3 weeks before this, and you agreed to, and then you threw off the entire like education and rollout of this thing in front of hundreds of people, right? And made it look like we did no prep work. And then it got escalated to a bunch of chiefs, because a bunch of chiefs were just like, how did Zach screw this up so bad that he didn't do the basic foundational stuff? So I sent them the recording of the 9 seconds where we were talking about it, and she agreed, because I recorded everything. I said, this is common behavior. Here it is. And then here's the other three emails where we agreed on it. And then here's all the meeting notes and here's all the footnotes. I said, hey, let me know what you want to do with it. I said, this is business as usual. Right. And like, it's unfortunate, right, that this is sometimes the situations that you get into with some certain people. And that's the reason why I recommend also getting the recordings, because emails, everything written, like, it's almost like court of law. You have like, even video evidence is not good enough sometimes. It's really hard to fire people nowadays. It's really hard to move forward.
And it's not that I'm advocating for this is a different person to lose their job, but I'm definitely like, something isn't right. And we have to figure out if we can make it right. And if we can't make it right, then we need a totally different arrangement in which we're not required to actually work with them.
What's so helpful for both of you guys is your credibility is very high. And you also have the ability to come from a place of neutrality and focus on functionality. When you de-escalate any sense of agenda other than I'm looking at pure function, the function isn't quite right, I'd like to improve the function, here are the things that I know will improve the function. And when you just make sense and you focus less on agenda and personality and all, which you're doing, you already are doing it, you're going to get a hearing. So you're doing great. I think you got it. We're 5 minutes over the call time. I just want to make sure I do need to run.
Gotta run. But this is super useful. I'll catch you guys next Thursday.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Thank you both. Good chat.
Bye.
Okay, bye.